What to Expect is a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Heidi Murkoff, and I'm a mom on a mission. A mission to help you know what to expect every step of the way. Ever wish that moms ran the world, or at least ran the country? I've had that recurring daydream for years now. It goes something like this. If moms ran the world, we'd have health care for everyone. No pregnancy would go uncared for. No child would go to sleep hungry. No parent would have to work three jobs to keep a roof over their family's head or choose between paying the rent or paying for prescriptions. And no mom would have to choose between nurturing her newborn and going without a paycheck. So far, my dream hasn't quite come true. But with more moms than ever running for office in the U.S., we are getting closer with every election. Moms like Kirsten Gillibrand, she's been serving for 14 years, first in the U.S. House of Representatives and now as the junior senator from New York, my first home state. And she has served even longer as a mom to 16-year-old Theo and 12-year-old Henry. Oh, and by the way, no big deal, she recently ran for president. I am so excited to welcome Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Heidi. It's my pleasure.
So first things first, we all know that moms are amazing at multitasking, but I got to ask, is it true that you spent 12 hours on the floor of the House debating a farm bill the day before you went into labor with Henry? Is that a new DIY technique that I should be adding to What to Expect when you're expecting?
Well, it's sort of true. I was in an armed services markup for the 12 hours before I went into labor. And so it starts at 9 a.m. and it goes usually till midnight. But I told the chairman in advance that I was going to leave at 9 p.m. because I knew that I was not staying awake past 9 p.m. because it was due like in a few days. And so I was so uncomfortable all day long. And I was clearly having early labor contractions.
Oh my goodness.
And so I got home and I went to bed, and sure enough, my water broke at 1 a.m. that morning. So I was in early labor all day long. Yeah.
That was good timing because it could have broken on, you know, the floor.
And I actually went to a Hillary fundraiser on the way home. So I not only did my armed services markup, but then I stopped at Hillary's event just to say hello, and then headed home and was in bed by 10 o'clock.
Okay, because you just had to add another layer of mom multitasking.
Just had to add another thing that day, yes.
I always say it takes a mom to get a mom, right? Yeah. And how has being a mom yourself and getting what moms go through every day in this country, how has it helped shape your policy priorities?
Well, it's not a surprise that I'm the leading sponsor in the Senate on national paid leave. I personally know how important it is that parents have a chance to bond with their newborns, their new adopted children. Parents need to be with children when they're sick or ill or have a diagnosis and hospitalization. Individuals need to be with their spouses when their spouse is sick or unable to work and needs care at home. So I know as a mom and as a wife that, and as a daughter, that our families are important and that we have to be able to make time for them to spend important time during these moments in people's lives that everybody has. And so we have moved the ball significantly on paid family leave. It was a non-issue when we started advocating it probably, I don't know, what was it, 8 years ago? And yeah. Now not only is it debated in every presidential debate, there's multiple ideas about how to do it. And I really believe that if Joe Biden is elected president, we will sign a national paid leave bill in his first 100 days. Like, I really feel like this time has come and parents desperately need this support for when they have new children, newborn children, or when their parents are ill and dying. They need this flexibility. And every other industrialized country in the world has it. So we are so far behind everyone else.
I know. And that holds true for a lot of policies, I got to say. And I just read today that France added 28 days of paid leave for fathers.
That's great.
And mandated that.
Our bill is gender neutral. So any parent can take up to 3 months paid and they'd get 66% of their salary. And it's an earned benefit. Everybody would buy in across their lifetime. So it's always there for you. And it's there for you for all life events, whether it's a dying parent or a new baby.
Exactly. And I feel like I've never met a mom who would say, we don't need family, paid family leave.
I doubt it.
Every parent, but especially parents who have to work extra hard and it's taking that time away from their job so they can nurture their baby is super important. What inspired you to run for office in the first place?
Well, it was really my grandmother. She was a woman who never had the opportunity to go to college and worked in our state legislature as a secretary. And she was smart enough as a young grandma to take me to events and to campaign headquarters and rallies. And so I really loved politics. And so I knew that it was a way to be heard. It was a way to lift up the voices of my community, people who weren't being listened to. And I always aspired to public service. And so after I spent about a decade in the law, about a decade working on other people's campaigns, right, I finally had the courage to run. But it was definitely the lessons of my grandmother and my mother daring me to be different, daring me to try to do hard things, to not give up. And so when I first ran for office, it was in my home district, 2-1 Republican district.
Wow.
And I ran despite all odds and I did win. So miracles can happen. And I had a lot of help. And it was one of those wave elections where people got elected all across the country.
That's awesome. Now, you don't have daughters, you have sons, but do you feel you're instilling that same lesson to them that your grandmother and mother instilled in you?
I'm certainly trying. It's my oldest is 16 and my youngest is 12 and they're basically both teenagers. So do they listen to mom at all? Not a lot, but I keep trying to instill in them the values that I hold most dear.
I think it'll stick. It's one of those things that you don't know at the time.
I can only hope. I can only hope.
So we've touched a little bit on paid family leave. And for me, I always ask this question over and over again because I can't understand what the answer could be. But why do we in the U.S. make it just so hard to be a parent in every way possible?
I think it's really simple. I think it's because not enough women are elected to office. We only have approximately 25% women in Congress. And until we get to 51%, I don't think we're going to have the family-friendly policies that we deserve. We don't have paid leave. We don't have equal pay for equal work. We don't have affordable daycare. We don't have universal pre-K. We don't have a family bill of rights, which is one thing I worked on the presidential campaign and rolled it out with lots of ideas about how to really make it possible for people to provide for their family and work and be good parents at the same time. So these are things that need leaders. And I think if we can elect more women and more parents, I think we'll have a better shot at it.
I could not agree more. One of those issues also that I think impacts women more is healthcare.
Yeah.
And the last time that we saw each other was actually at a Mother's Day event. We were all trying to protect the Affordable Care Act.
Yes, I remember.
And especially as it relates to pregnant women, to moms, there are still threats to that Affordable Care Act. Can you just tell us a little bit about what is at stake, what the risks are, what the threats are, and who they might affect most?
We're most concerned about healthcare in this debate about the next Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. Because if, in fact, Trump decides to place a new justice who's ultra-conservative, there's a decision going to happen in November that if it goes the wrong way, the Affordable Care Act will be removed. And there'll no longer be a requirement that you cover all people, even if you have pre-existing conditions. And so a lot of people's health care is going to be a grave risk with a potentially ultra-conservative justice to replace Justice Ginsburg. I also believe health care is on the ballot. I think if you vote for Joe Biden, then health care will become a right, not a privilege. It'll be guaranteed for all Americans. I believe if you vote for President Trump, he will dismantle the Affordable Care Act brick by brick until no one has guaranteed access.
And I think a lot of women don't realize, first of all, there's the contraception that's covered under the ACA, which can be quite unaffordable and not accessible otherwise. for instance, an IUD costs like $900, and under the Affordable Care Act, it could be free.
And birth control for a year would cost $100, $150, $200, depending on what your copay is.
Exactly. And I think something else they don't realize is that before the ACA, and this happened to me because I got pregnant, I didn't have health insurance. We had just gotten married. I wasn't under Eric's plan. And so we were faced with, like, do we pay for pregnancy out of pocket or do we lie about the dates and try to get some health insurance, which we ultimately did. But that pregnancy was a pre-existing condition. Like, you could not get care if you were pregnant.
It's outrageous. I mean, it's outrageous. It's about humanity. Like, are you kidding
me? It's about humanity. And also it's about cost. Like, what is the cost of prenatal care versus the cost of a NICU stay or preterm birth or all the other complications?
Absolutely.
So even if you're not particularly compassionate about pregnant women, you should want to if you're concerned about the bottom line.
Yeah, exactly.
And with the ACA Medicaid expansion, it's still not in 14 states. And that means that pregnant women, their care, their prenatal care lapses at 2 months after delivery.
That's outrageous.
And that leaves so many vulnerable women at risk, not just for pregnancy complications that might go undiagnosed, but also for postpartum depression. I loved your first 100 days plan.
Yeah, that was fun.
So you want to just tell us what your wish list for maternal health care would be?
So for maternal health care, I had this family bill of rights. And I looked at what does it mean to be in a family and to be a parent? And what are all the areas where our system is lacking? And so starting from the beginning, first, mandatory insurance coverage for prenatal care, for adoption, for IVF if you are having trouble conceiving, tax credits for lower income parents, ability of LGBT couples to adopt. Those are all like everyone should be as a human right able to become a parent. Then second, let's make sure the baby survives. Every baby that comes home would get a baby bundle. It would be a box that could be used as a crib that has swaddling cloth, formula, diapers.
Like in Finland.
And you take that box home and that's going to hopefully save your child's life in the first month or two. Third, national paid leave, because we don't have it. Fourth, universal pre-K, because it's a whole year that a parent could be working if their child could be in school. And we know every dollar you put into early childhood education is worth at least $11 in that child's lifetime in terms of ability to impact the economy. And then affordable daycare, so that we actually can subsidize daycare in this country, make it more affordable and higher quality, so every worker can have access to high quality affordable daycare. And then one more, maternal mortality, making sure you survive delivery. And if you're a Black woman in this country, you're 4 times more likely to die in childbirth within a year of giving birth because of all the institutional racism in our healthcare system. So we would create these maternity kits where every emergency room, every delivery room would have a tray of all the equipment that's needed when a woman begins to bleed out or when her blood pressure crashes or all these different things when sometimes they're not prepared. They don't have the tools on hand to actually save her life. We also will educate doctors and nurses to understand what unconscious or other bias might look like so that they, when a Black woman says, I don't feel right, you believe her and you don't say, oh, you're fine, honey, you just had a baby, when she's actually bleeding out or her blood pressure is crashing. Those are the things we want to guarantee. We want to make sure every person can survive childbirth, that we can survive the first few months, that you can provide for your kids in the first few years. If we had that as a country, we'd be much healthier and much happier.
We'd be much more successful as well. We'd have a better economy.
Absolutely.
You know, the CDC recently launched the Hear Her campaign, which I'm sure you've been participating in. But it's basically that you have to listen when moms speak. When you feel something is wrong, when you feel something, say something. Yeah. But it doesn't help. I was just having a conversation with a Black mom last night. She actually described it, I feel like I'm dying, to the doctor. And they said, well, you know, that's pregnancy. You know, you feel like you're dying sometimes.
It's outrageous. Like, that poor woman.
And she lost the baby because it was a kidney infection. Those are very insidious. You don't necessarily know. You can't put your finger on it. You just feel terrible.
Right.
And nobody listened to her.
and nobody listened to her and no one tested her. It's just, I hope she gets some measure of justice for
I
that.
I get these messages all the time, and it's just heartbreaking. It's so unnecessary. And it tells us so much about the inherent bias, and not just in the healthcare system, but especially in maternal health. There are also gaps in rural care, right, for moms.
Yes. I saw a lot of that when I was in Iowa and other rural areas in the country. I met with moms who had to drive 40 miles just to get a doctor's appointment or to deliver their baby. Imagine going into childbirth and having a 40-minute drive. But what had happened in that state is they just kept not funding maternal care, and they closed maternity wards. They fired obstetricians. They just didn't have the care local. So one of the things that we worked on was a bill that Heidi Heitkamp originally wrote from North Dakota, and it's called the Rural Moms Act. And that basically developed better training to run rural health facilities, fix the shortage by making it easier and cheaper to train new OBGYNs, and created resources for rural maternal care. So what did exist could get the resources they need to be able to offer the care they need.
Yeah, and we probably need better broadband access so we can do more telehealth and maybe mobile units for maternity care.
Yeah. Yeah, and just better training. So if there is, like, just let's say the closest is just a community health center, that they have someone on staff who is knowledgeable on obstetrics and maternal care, so that in an emergency, there's somewhere to go.
For some reason, we always put moms last, and we seem to
totally
put moms of color last.
Double last. And it's, again, it's why we need more women in Congress, more women of color in Congress. We need our government to look like us. We need to have 51% of women represented across the board in all levels of government. And then our healthcare would be relevant.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of men just don't understand what it means not to have an OBGYN unit within 50 miles of your home. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a problem. They wouldn't even care. So these are the kinds of things. We need more women to run for governor. We need more women to run for Senate and House. Hopefully we'll have a woman president someday.
Yeah.
That will matter. So we just have to keep working hard towards it.
All of us. You've been a longtime champion of military families and service members. And recently, you co-sponsored the TRICARE Coverage for Doula Support Act with Senator Blumenthal. Mm-hmm. I actually brought them the idea of doulas for military families being covered by TRICARE because I see so many military moms who don't get support. They're serving so far from their family and their friends and their network of support. You know, so doulas would be an important missing link in that care, you know, that they could fill.
Yeah.
So that even if a partner's deployed or your mom, especially now during COVID.
You'd have someone to be at the delivery
with
you. Yeah, I think that's super smart. Yeah, that's why I'm on the bill.
It reduces costs too.
Totally. And risks to the mother's life.
Exactly.
And the baby's life.
Yes. We talk a lot about supporting the troops. It's, you know, a bumper sticker. It's a mantra. But I feel, and I know you feel, that it's just as important to support the families.
Yes.
Who are actually serving with them.
Absolutely. It's a sacrifice they all make.
So what are some ways you think we could better support military families?
First of all, one of the challenges is when your spouse gets deployed, you might be in the middle of school or you might be have a great job. And so there's so many logistical challenges. So we want to make it easier for spouses to be able to work in their new deployed area. So a couple of things, helping them transfer whatever their educational and certifications are to new jurisdictions. So making that more streamlined. We also need to make sure that they have access to affordable daycare so that spouses, when they do get to a new place, they can actually continue to work or work outside the home because daycare is provided. We need safe housing. Mm-hmm. We've had hearing after hearing about housing that had vermin, roaches,
mold.
It was so disgusting. Mm-hmm. And so guaranteeing safe, affordable housing for all members of the military. And then making sure the communities where military bases are get impact aid, because impact aid is actually what funds the school system and the daycare system and any other system that that family needs to access. So we want to make sure we actually fund the communities where our bases are located.
And, you know, because I talk to so many military moms, I hear not just horror stories about housing, but I also hear about the wait lists for childcare. You mentioned that there are wait lists of 18 months. So
it's absurd. Well,
you're PCSing again by the time you get your childcare. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not fair. It's solely on, I mean, and it's a lack of valuing of a spouse.
Yeah, exactly.
That spouse has to take what he or she gets regardless, and that whether they want to be employed or not is irrelevant, whether they have a profession. Making sure that when a spouse gets transferred, that the other spouse can stay to finish out a school term or to finish out a job or finish out a kid's school term.
Right.
And so that the spouses can separate. One can move for 3 months early before the other, depending on which one it is. So I think we got part of that in the bill, but that was specifically because they'd get no notice.
Yep.
And you might be a teacher teaching a semester, or your kid's in school and you don't want to disrupt them in the middle of the school year. Like, there's a lot of real considerations that you should give families before you move them. And we tried to highlight that. I don't know if it's in the final bill, but that's something I've been working on too.
Oh, there's so much more to do. I mean, I had also suggested that the TRICARE cover the training of spouses to become doulas, because that way
yes.
they could take that skill wherever they went.
Yes, totally. And allow spouses to work at daycare centers
mm-hmm. yes.
to provide the 24/7 care that's needed, and then the on-site training so they can become professionals in those daycare centers.
Absolutely.
So they should, it just should be all set up in every place where we send our troops, that spouses who want to work and don't have a job can work in daycare centers and work as doulas and other jobs that they will always be able to do.
Exactly. If moms ran the world.
If moms ran the world.
I remember just before the 2016 election, you moderated a panel that I was on, and you asked me what would be my elevator speech to a mom if she happened to come on the elevator with a stroller about why she should vote. Or maybe you might have said how she should vote or who she should vote for. I said, it's easy, because I would just tell her to vote for those who vote for you and for your family, for those policies that matter to you. And 4 years later, we've launched a campaign called Mom the Vote with What to Expect and with the What to Expect Project. And basically, it is nonpartisan, but the idea is to engage and inspire moms to vote and to vote for those who vote for you.
Who care about moms, which is great.
Exactly. Because too many moms sit the process out.
Yeah. And they don't know what their elected leaders think about these issues. And they need to know, because there's a big difference between the various paid leave plans out there. I mean, the one that Joni Ernst and someone else support basically says, if you want paid leave, you've got to draw down your Social Security. Well, you're going to need that Social Security when you hit 65 or 67. Like, you're going to need it.
I'm going to choose your child or your senior life.
And it's really going to harm women, because they have less money saved away in Social Security mm-hmm. anyway, because they tend to have chopped up work life and they earn mm-hmm. less. They don't earn a dollar on the dollar that white men earn. So they're already screwed in their Social Security. So drawing down is not smart. Whereas an earned benefit means everyone buys it, and it's there for men and women. It's there for all families, and that matters.
And it should be a right, I'm just going to say.
It should be a right.
All these things should be rights. It's not rocket science. So I always say knowledge is power. It's especially empowering when you're pregnant, you're a new mom, that knowledge. Voting is also power. And mm-hmm. an informed vote, just like you said, is the most powerful of all. So what would you like moms and dads to know so they could be better informed, inspired, and energized about the importance of voting in 2020? I'm turning the question back to you, if you're in the elevator.
So there's two things I want everyone to know about the moment we're in. Number one, they have to fill out their census form, because the census forms determine how much money your city or state gets for all the social programs that we're talking about today. Number two, make sure you vote. Have a plan. Make sure you're registered. If you want to vote by mail mm-hmm. early, so it gets there on time and can be counted. Just make sure your voice is counted. And, you know, just create your plan and do it now. And if you want to vote by mail, get your absentee ballot right now. So two things: census, vote by mail, absentee ballot or make your plan to be in person and know where you're voting. Just make your plan.
And spread the word. Tell everyone you know.
Spread the word. Make sure everyone you know and love does both things, census and vote.
Mom the vote. And then we just lost an icon.
Oh, yes,
Ruth
we did.
Bader Ginsburg, who blazed trails for all women, who followed her, who will follow her in the future. All the little girls growing up now are yet to be born. And I was so moved watching you and the other women in Congress paying your respects to her as she laid in state in the Capitol. And she meant so much to so many women. What do you feel is the most important part of her legacy? And how should we best honor it?
I think her legacy is that she fought for justice every day of her life. She fought for equality. She fought to end discrimination against women in all its forms. And that's a pretty powerful legacy. She spent a whole life doing it. So for all your listeners, you know, lifelong goals are important and things aren't immediate. You sometimes do need to spend decades fighting for what you believe in, but it's worth every effort. And she's just such a testament to resilience and enormous perseverance and persistence. And I think she's an icon and a legend for all of us to look up to and to try to replicate.
Yeah. She was the original working mom, right?
Very much so.
Amazing. If you've met one mom who inspired you most, who would that be?
Well, I'd say my own mom definitely inspired me. She was a mom who, in her era, not many moms worked outside the home, but she did. And she went to law school and became a lawyer. She was a family lawyer. She helped people adopt children. She helped families buy homes. She helped small businesses incorporate. So she did a lot of community legal work. And I really admired her because, you know, she would make the breakfast and she'd pick us up at 5 o'clock and make the dinner and just kept our house moving along, even though she had the same job as my dad. They were both lawyers. But she was the one who, of course, juggled all the bits that moms typically juggle. And she just was a great role model for me because she never even questioned that she shouldn't have an impact on her community and her society. And that she wanted to do that. That's how she was built. It's what she wanted to do. And she never felt guilty about it. And she always just said, I'm just going to do both and I will show you how. And she did. And so I really enjoyed watching her. And now as a mom, I seek my mother's advice on everything. And when I'm exhausted or really downtrodden, I go to her house and say, will you please watch the children? Will you please help Henry with this and that and the other thing? And can you please read Theo's essay? And she's like, of course. And so she's a very helpful grandma, as well as a wonderful role model as a mom.
Grandma's the best gig of all, I gotta say.
Best gig of all. I love how she does it, and I will look forward to it myself.
Yeah, there's lots to look forward to. But what's great is that she raised someone who other women can be inspired by, which is a nice legacy for her as well. So I wanted to thank you so much for spending time with us today and sharing your insights as a senator, as a mom, and as a human being on this planet where we need more humanity.
Well, thank you, Heidi. And thank you for being such an extraordinary leader and advocate. Your voice really does resonate and carries very far and wide. So thank you for all you do to lift up the needs of others and for constantly making a difference.
Well, thank you. We are on Team Mom.
Yep. God bless. You. Take care.
Ooh, baby love, my baby love, I need you. Oh, how I need you.
Thanks for listening. Remember, I'm always here for you. What to expect is always here for you. We're all in this together. For more on what you heard on today's episode, visit whattoexpect.com/podcast. You can also check out What to Expect When You're Expecting, What to Expect the First Year, and the What to Expect app. And we want to hear from you. Connect with us on our community message board or on our social media. You can find me at Heidi Murkoff and Emma at Emma Bing WTE. And of course, at What to Expect. Baby Love is performed by Riley Biederer. What to Expect is a production of iHeartRadio. For more shows from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
In my arms, why don't you? won't you stay?